people, give the money if there was a delay, if there was a cancellation. But that is something that the Trump administration has said they do not want to do.
Well, we took a more common sense approach to it. if your flight is canceled and you're stuck, you're flying through Newark and you're stuck here, well, we think the airline should actually refund your flight or put you up in a hotel, give you a meal. But if they changed your flight number and it's going to fly at the same time, that doesn't count as a cancellation, and they don't have to refund you. And so we just want to have the right balance between the airline.
Pause it for a second. I just want to be clear. The idea that they would change the flight number, I suspect, was not what the Biden administration was talking about. There is a difference between your flight gets canceled and you're stuck midway through a trip, that your connecting flight gets canceled, you're stuck midway through a trip, and obligating the airline to pay for you to stay overnight somewhere, which I think was already existing as far as I recall.
Yeah.
And there's only one other option. It's either that or they just change the flight number and the flight's leaving at exactly the same time.
Who's those are
the
two a things. Refund for that?
Those are the two things that happen. Just like you get stuck in Newark in the middle of a flight, or they just change the number on you. There's no other scenario where you're stuck where there can't the flight is delayed for 2 or 3 hours because they decide to get rid of, or it's canceled because they decide they didn't sell enough seats on it, and they're not going to be profitable enough.
Well, and people should know that the airline lobby is one of the most powerful lobbies in Washington. And there was some speculation that that gang of 8 Democrats who ended up caving on the government shutdown were being heavily influenced by the airline lobby. And it sounds like Duffy is just basically regurgitating their talking points now on air.
Let's just go back a little bit. I mean, because this is impressive. I mean, this
you need a balance.
You really. It's a common sense approach.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to give flyers any type of compensation. It's common sense. You don't. Corporation.
Can't you hear a lobbyist saying that, and he just repeats it?
Totally.
Common sense approach.
Fund your flight, or put you up in a hotel, give you a meal. But if they changed your flight number and it's going to fly at the same time, that doesn't count as a cancellation, and they don't have to refund you. And so we just want to have the right balance between the airlines and the passengers. And you all know that if you have all these passenger rights that are dinging airlines left and right, yeah, some where they should be dinged, but sometimes they should not be sanctioned, well, just the price of tickets are going to go up. So what is the right balance? And I think the last administration, the guy that sat in the seat was trying to run for president. I'm not running for president. So what I'm doing is saying, how do we have the balance between the airlines and the passenger and make sure it's fair for both?
You know what he is doing instead? There's an article in the New York Times. Sean Duffy wants you to stop wearing PJs on the plane.
We got sound for you.
Oh, we do. All right.
Also,
well,
the idea that Buttigieg was running for president means that he has to listen to people, and Duffy's not running for president, so he gets the
right. Exactly.
I mean, this is part of the good stuff that Buttigieg got as transportation secretary, and some of which it seems like he's kind of slapdashing together and taking credit for as well, Duffy. But yeah,
and it should be noted that they're like protecting the profitability, which is to say how much money these companies can kick back to investors, as opposed to it's like when they try to claw back all this money.
They're getting dinged.
Something I didn't know: in 2019, 400% increase of in-flight outbursts by passengers. 2021, 1 in 5 flight attendants faced physical incidents. You want to change that?
Yeah, so Donald Trump talks about the golden age of transportation, the golden age of America. But the golden age in transportation truly begins with you, the traveler. Right? And so if you think, you just watch social media, you have brawls at the baggage claim. You have passengers berating gate agents. We have unruly passengers on airplanes. People dress up like they're going to bed when they fly. I see people getting on airplanes, and they're having a hard time taking their luggage and getting in the oversized or the above bin. Help people out. Be nice. Be courteous. And so we want to push people as we come into a really busy travel season. Help people out. Be in a good mood. Dress up. Bring civility back to travel. And I think everyone's experience is going to be that much better.
Wait, but okay. If you dress up, you're going to be more uncomfortable.
Well, here's the point, though. Here's the point. is it is true. Like, I remember flying in like 1975, and like people would dress up, but the seats, the distance between the seats, honestly, was like 6 to 12 inches more. Like, when you are shoved into an airline as if it was like you're in the hull of a transatlantic ship, okay?
Like on a C-130.
Then of course you're going to do anything to make the experience less painful. I mean, this is the thing. And there's a reason why there's so many outbursts. It's because people are completely agitated by their experience at the hands of these airlines.
Or it's just moral degeneracy, Sam. Have you considered that it has nothing to do with corporations taking advantage of you and exploiting you and packing you in like sardines? Yeah, it's
the
fact
that... slapping on lipstick and smiling?
Yeah, right, right. It's because women have their hair up in ponytails. But like, I just
to get back to his whole thing about, like, you know, it's going to raise ticket prices if airlines are held to account for the way they treat their passengers. Airlines, U.S. airlines, had $4 billion net profit in the second quarter of 2025. In the second quarter. I'm sorry, $4 billion in the second quarter. Now, maybe some seasons are a little more profitable than others, but just in the back of the napkin math here, we're talking a $16 billion net profit, and they get away with putting people into these like sardine cans, and then you've got Patrick Duffy telling you, or Sean Duffy, sorry, I got my TV stars
confused.
Mixed up. You get Sean Duffy telling you, like, the idea is, hey, maybe dress a little nicer. Incidentally, I imagine he goes business class every single time.
Oh yeah. Where you can stretch out your legs in the suit. I mean, Sean Duffy, so this is what it says. They started a new campaign on Wednesday that he called The Golden Age of Travel Starts With You, complete with a 1960s-style public service announcement that spliced together scenes of the country's first air travelers dressed in suits and hats with present-day clips of in-flight brawls and airport meltdowns. In the background, Frank Sinatra sings Come Fly With Me.
Let's bring back airline regulation.
Exactly. In the 1960s...
Do you understand that if you went on a 747 in this was as late into the 70s, maybe even the early 80s, I don't remember, that on a 747, they had a second level of the airport, you could go up in a lounge, and you go just to hang out there. You know, like, it's insane.
I know.
Like, you do that? Like,
have you ever smoked on an airplane?
That was like 12 when it was still smoking on an airplane.
Though.
Yeah, no, I did. No, of course not.
I mean, I'm sorry, just really quick story on this. When I was flying back from LA on Sunday morning, like I was 4 hours. I was in the window seat and I had to crawl over the guy to go to the bathroom. I waited for a long time and his wife was in the middle and she was like, oh, like, you're going to wake him up. I'm like, okay, well, I gotta go. And I just think, like, but Sean Duffy looks at that as like, that's the problem, because I was in leggings and a sweatshirt. That must have been the situation. Or it could have been that I couldn't get out.
There's
of
this
only
4
aisle.
Inches between
without crawling over the stranger.
Between the seat and the back of the other seat. I mean, it used to be, honestly, just like riding in economy was just like, you could shuffle through like you can at stadium seating. Right. It's just insane. They did have when I took a train across the country in the mid 90s and they had a smoking car. But that was it.
Next stop, they're gonna make us wear diapers.
Exactly.
So you don't have to move at all.
There's gonna be a tube that you just insert. Okay. First couple words from our sponsors, and then we will talk more about this Mom Donnie visit to the White House. And also what he had to say over the weekend about Hakeem Jeffries. First, a couple of words. Let's be real. Our diets this time of the year, I mean, frankly, for some people, all year round, all the parties, the get-togethers, aren't always the most, let's say, balanced, as it were. Enter Ritual. It is the obsessively researched multivitamin. Ritual's essential multis have the nutrients most of us don't get enough from food, all in their clean, absorbable forms. No shady additives or ingredients that can do more harm to your body than good. I take a Ritual multivitamin for men over the age, like an older age one. But the big thing for me was always like, I'd go to the doctor and he'd say, you have a problem with your vitamin D. Mm-hmm. You need more of that, particularly as you get older, because it has like anti-cancer properties or associated with whatever it is. And I would go to the, I just did this so many times. I would leave my doctor's office. I would go to like a pharmacy. I would buy vitamins. I would take them sporadically until I ran out, and then I would forget, and that was
right.
It. The thing I love about Ritual is that, A, they have all the vitamins you would want, but it's gentle on the stomach, so you can take it any time of the day when you think about it, as opposed to like, because if I don't, I wouldn't. And they get you on subscription, and they source everything, so you know where it's coming from. And here is the upside, too. It is Ritual's Black Friday sale is here. Science-backed multivitamin for men 18-plus with high quality and traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. Vitamin D3, that's a big one, to support normal muscle and immune function. Omega-3 DHA to support heart health and brain health. They're essential for men 18-plus multivitamin. Contains 10 key nutrients in two delayed release capsules that are designed both for optimal absorption per day and to be gentle on the stomach. Essential for Men is third party tested for heavy metals and clean label project certified, so you know you can trust what you're putting into your body. Ritual multivitamins are vegan, non-GMO, project verified, gluten and major allergen free, and made traceable. It's HSA, FSA, eligible with seamless checkout experience, so you can save when you shop with pre-tax dollars. Essential for Men is a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get early access to their Black Friday sale for 40% off your first month at ritual.com/majority. That's ritual.com/majority, 40% off your first month. Don't miss out. This is their best sale of the season. We'll put the links in the podcast and YouTube description. Also, you're going to be traveling maybe over the next couple of days. You find yourself without a doctor or a dentist. Let's say you have an emergency, a dental problem. Mm-hmm. Has happened to me. I don't know what it is. I've been told that when you fly sometimes creates pressure.
That makes sense.
But how did I find that dentist when I was out of town? ZocDoc.
Whoa.
And if you're getting older like myself, you may realize you need to go to the doctor on a regular basis or more often or once. Who is it I just met? So they haven't been to, you haven't been to a dentist in a long time.
I haven't been to a dentist in like 15 years.
I don't think that's a good idea.
I got most of my teeth still though.
Well, ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high quality in-network doctors and click instantly to book an appointment. You guys are both. Right?
I got my dentist through ZocDoc, my permanent dentist.
Matt has used it. What was your experience?
Yeah, I found a dermatologist through ZocDoc.
And the thing about ZocDoc that's awesome is that, A, when you go on there, it's like one-stop shopping. You can find out, you can book in-network appointments with more than 100,000 doctors across every specialty. You can filter for doctors who are near you. You can filter for doctors that take your insurance. You can filter for doctors who have certain attributes that you want, like maybe they got a good bedside manner or, I don't know, that they supposedly listen well, whatever it is. You can see their actual appointment openings. So what you do is you just choose a time slot that works for you and click, and you've booked a visit. All one-stop shopping. Appointments made through ZocDoc also happen fast, typically within like 24 to 72 hours of booking. You can even get same-day appointments. I want to thank ZocDoc for sponsoring today's episode. You could stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/majority. Find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc, ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/majority, ZocDoc.com/majority. And lastly, we're headed towards the holiday gift-giving season, Hanukkah, Christmas, almost at the same time this year, I think, which makes it easy. Or maybe you just want to give people a gift. This is a great gift. I have given this gift multiple times. I've given it to my own family members. I gave it to my girlfriend's parents. They have a bunch of kids in that family. Aura Frames. It will keep your family connected, and it will. It's like a gift that gives them something every single day. They love it. And here's the beauty. You can personalize your gift by adding a message before it comes there. You can preload all the photos without even touching the box.
Yes.
Just use the code. All of their frames come in a premium gift box with no price tag. Obviously, you don't want that. Super easy to use. Let's say you get a family with like 10 kids. Everybody gets an app. You upload the photos. It shows up on mom and dad's frame immediately. Can be video as well. There's unlimited storage. I'm telling you, this family, they have multiple frames in the house. Now they're giving frames to the kids so that they can all just trade all these things. And if, you know, and if you have parents with a sense of humor or uncle or
right.
You put memes up. There's all sorts of things you could do.
Lots of creative ways.
Yes. For a limited time, visit AuraFrames.com. Get $45 off of Aura's best-selling Carver Matte Frames, named number one by Wirecutter. Use the promo code MAJORITY at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code MAJORITY. Look, this is a huge sale they're having right now. Their Black Friday, Cyber Monday deal is the best of the year. Order now before it ends. Get your shopping done.
Yes.
This will save you so much stress. This is so easy to do. You're looking for a gift for your parents. This is one. And here's the thing. Who knows, what to get your parents? This is one where it's like
easy.
The thought is nice. It's easy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to love the pictures. That is promo code MAJORITY, AuraFrames.com, promo code MAJORITY. Terms and conditions apply. We'll put the links in the podcast and YouTube description. All right, let's get in on this. On, I'm not going to start with this. Actually, we should start with that. This is, what number is this? Okay, so on Friday, as we were doing the show, Zohra Mamdani was headed down to visit Donald Trump at the White House. He's the president.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of controversy about this. Well, in some circles, there was controversy. How could Mamdani meet with Trump?
Well, that's insane if someone thinks that. Because
how dare he do his job?
How dare he? This is where Matt said it best last week. We've got to get out of campaign mode and into governing mode. Zohra Mamdani is the mayor-elect. He has to worry about New Yorkers, and he has to meet with the president for those purposes.
There are things he needs from Trump, actually.
Now, look,
yeah.
There are two sort of major constituencies that Mamdani has. One is, obviously, the New Yorkers who elected him mayor. For the most part, your average New Yorker who voted for Mamdani was doing so because they want the material benefits that he has promised. And those include, you know, his four major planks, affordability planks. But they also include things like protect the city from Donald Trump.
Yep.
That means, you know, protect folks from ICE, build a sense of community. All the material things that you elect a mayor for, regardless of what, you know, sort of like without necessarily being part of any type of movement. Then the other constituency is a movement constituency. Ones, maybe they're Democratic Socialists. Maybe they're just, unaffiliated Democratic Socialists. Maybe they're Sock Dems. Maybe they're progressives. Maybe they're even partisan Democrats who perceive his agenda to be the way in which they go. So there's a movement constituency and there's a material mayor constituency. And these are overlapped, too, in obviously, in certain places. And so you have to view everything that Mamdani does through both those lenses and also understand that from his perspective, I would imagine, and I share this perspective at least, and I'm projecting it on him, that he can serve the movement constituency the most by being successful in serving the material constituency of his voters. So with that said, let's play a couple of clips that show the trajectory of this, because he's going down there. Remember what they did to Zelensky when he came to the White House. I mean, this is just the most obvious one, but Trump is always loving to humiliate people. In fact, he humiliated Hakeem Jeffries and Chuck Schumer when they went in for the shutdown negotiations.
With the MAGA hats
making
Trump 2028 or something, trying to troll them about him running for a third term.
Yeah, total humiliation.
It's interesting who he respects and who he doesn't.
I mean, F him. Who cares? But
he has a superpower, and that is this sixth sense about marketing and popularity. And he sees what Zohran's got going on.
And who knows if those hats were in the White House meeting? But the question of whether they were going to release those. But here is what people were thinking, anyways, before going in. Here's Elise Stefanik. I don't think you can find a more grovelly a sycophant for Donald Trump. I mean, someone who has literally changed her entire political orientation to align with Donald Trump, put all the eggs in his basket, essentially.
And he has made her eat shit so many times this year. Like, this is that, like, I mean, with the withdrawing the nomination for UN ambassador and then saying you got to run in this race in New York City and just throwing her under the bus. And I mean, you can intro this here, Sam.
Yeah, well,
it's
that's
delicious.
It. Yes. And understand, this is also indicative of what all of the sort of like the MAGA apparatchiks thought was going to happen. And here, let's just hear it.
The president is really kind of setting the table for tomorrow's meeting, put out on Truth Social. Quote, communist mayor of New York City, Zohran Kwame Mamdani, has asked for a meeting. We're hoping that they open this thing up to the press tomorrow, because it could be Pelosi Schumer 2.0 in the Oval Office.
Well, certainly there's always surprises. I think it would be great to have it open for people to see the discussion that happens. My priority is always putting New York first and delivering results to the hardworking families of New York. What we cannot continue to see is this embrace of communism, mm-hmm. which Mamdani has brought to the most important city in the country. And really, the entire world is watching this. Again, he is going to make New York more unaffordable and less safe. He wants to raise taxes. He wants to double down on failed bail reform and defund the police. And he has made it extremely dangerous for Jewish families living in New York. The fact that he has said he will arrest Prime Minister Netanyahu, that he campaigned with unindicted co-conspirators of terrorist attacks.
I want to ask.
He's made it very unsafe for one particular Jewish family to visit New York.
So there's Elise Stefanik, and she is planning to run for governor against Kathy Hochul. Basically running against Mamdani, tying Mamdani in there. We know that Hakeem Jeffries was going around saying the reason why he didn't want Mamdani to win was because he was afraid that it was going to destroy Democrats' opportunity to take the House, because Republicans are going to run against Mamdani as a jihadist, as a communist.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess who just shattered all of those plans? This is 12 number 6. Yes.
Also, you
can do 12 too. Go ahead.
I used to call New York City home. Would you feel comfortable living in New York City under a Mamdani administration?
Yeah, I would. I really would. Especially after the meeting. Absolutely.
What makes you comfortable?
We agree on a lot more than I would have thought. I think he's, I want him to do a great job, and we'll help him do a great job. You know, he may have different views, but in many ways, you know, we were discussing when Bernie Sanders was out of the race, I picked up a lot of his votes, and people had no idea, because he was strong on not getting ripped off in trade and lots of the things that I've practiced and been very successful on, tariffs, a lot of things. Bernie Sanders and I agreed on much more than people thought. And when he was put out of the race, I think quite unfairly, if you want to know the truth, many of the Bernie Sanders voters voted for me. And I felt very comfortable, frankly, in seeing that and saying that. And, you know, it just turned out to be a statistical truth. But, no, I feel very comfortable. I would feel very, very comfortable being in New York, and I think much more so after the meeting. Yes, please.
Okay. Can you imagine being Elise Stefanik and hearing that? Can you imagine being, never mind Elise Stefanik, every single Republican who is running, and all of them in the House are, who were planning, like, this is the party of Zohran Mamdani. Yeah. This is the party of communism. This is the party of Islamofascism. And they're going to, and
I mean,
and,
Laura Loomer has got to be heartbroken.
And over and over again. Here is clip number six. Like, specifically, Elise Stefanik.
Yes.
Was going to run whole hog on this, and she was going to show the way for everybody, you know, across the country, how you run against the Democrat.
You do. I enjoyed the meeting. We had a great meeting. Please.
Mr. President, Republican Elise Stefanik has campaigned multiple times by calling Zohran Mamdani a jihadist. Do you think you're standing next to a jihadist right now in the Oval Office?
No, I don't, but she's out there campaigning, and, you know, you say things sometimes in a campaign.
Isn't that sort of
she's a very capable person. But you really have to ask her about that. But you know, I don't particularly. I think I met with a very, I met with a man who's a very rational person. I met with a man who really wants to see New York be great again. And I can say again, because New York was great. You know, when I came down to
okay,
Washington.
Okay, all right. We don't need to hear him reminisce about New York.
But that's, he did play on, I guarantee you, Zohran played on his New York nostalgia.
Of course, of course. And here's, I mean, this is like the functional equivalent of ICE picking up Elise Stefanik, putting a hood over her head and driving her out into the middle of some desert somewhere and saying, good luck with your campaign.
Right.
Like literally, she has nothing to campaign on now. She has nothing to campaign on.
And he also screwed her by, again, taking her out for the UN ambassadorship. And then she got that fancy apartment. She got her new little outfits. And she was thinking that she was going to be leaning into the pro-Zionist kind of element of her record, because she was leading those committees going after all of those college presidents as well. And then that didn't end up working out. And she was thrown back into her house district, where she hasn't had a town hall in, like, years or months or something like that. And she thought she was getting out. She thought she was moving on up. And he continues to destroy her career, which is just wonderful to watch.
And this was going to be, as a political matter, this was going to be the Republican strategy for the midterms. It was the only thing they had, right? Because when you run in midterms, particularly when the opposite party is in power, it is all a referendum on those in power. And so Republicans had nothing to run on proactively except to demonize Mamdani and attempt to tie him. Now, whether that would have worked or not, we don't know. But now I can tell you, it is impossible for them to run this play successfully or with the same amount of success. Because if you're running for some swing district in Pennsylvania and somebody goes, are you really going to elect somebody who is from the party of Zohran Mamdani? And this person's going to go like, well, I think, you know, President Trump said this, you know, this is clearly a rational guy who's just trying to do his best. And now the only other part about this that people have to understand is, again, like, you know, this is Mamdani was able to do this. I don't think Donald Trump went into this meeting in this way, because if there was any indication that that was the case, we would have heard about it. We would have heard about it. At least Stefanik would not be out there.
He called him a communist 24 hours before the meeting.
Exactly. Like, he was getting ready to do a humiliation tour. And Mamdani went in there and said everything he needed to say to make Donald Trump like, this guy's great. He's a winner. He's very smooth. He's a very good gentleman. But when he's in the room with him, he doesn't back off of anything. Let's do the number one. Like, well, this is...
Zoran didn't back off of one thing, and Trump backed off of every critique of Zoran.
Not just backing off of Zoran's critique. Cosa. He said, yeah, okay, he
and
can say that
him
about
from
me.
The press.
Go ahead,
but
watch
even,
this.
I'm sorry, but even look at the visual. Trump sitting down and Zoran standing up. Like, dude, from the beginning, whoever orchestrated the private meeting before this and then the press conference, I mean, Zoran's team is phenomenal, but this was just amazing.
Do you remember that picture we took in here, that joke picture?
Yes.
With me and Hassan. With Hassan?
Yeah.
Like, that was a joke. Me going like this, and that's all that Trump was doing the whole freaking time.
I'll see if I can send that.
Go ahead.
To Stephen Nelson, mm-hmm. He asked about your comment calling the president a fascist, and your answer was, both President Trump and I have been clear about our positions and our views. Mm-hmm. Are you affirming that you think President Trump is a fascist?
I've spoken about...
That's okay. You can just say
okay.
Yes. So.
Okay.
Yeah. It's easier. It's easier than explaining it. I don't mind.
I don't mind.
I wanted to ask you also about this Ukraine plan.
Incidentally, he said yes. He said yes.
He goes, okay, then yes.
Okay, yes. I'll take yes as an answer.
And Trump is sincere when he says, I don't care if you call me a fascist.
Yeah. And then later he said something about, he's called me a despot. I've been called a lot worse than that.
He patted him again.
Yeah. Did we want more? Because
Here's number three in terms of
you know what we forgot to mention in setup for this is the 86 Dems who voted to denounce socialism.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing. It's like how poorly timed. Well, now, of course, the Republicans brought that up as part of this. Like, this was all part of their strategy. That was not a coincidence that vote took place that day. It was the Republicans are putting that up because they know they're on a roll here. And then all of a sudden, I hate to say this, but record scratch.
Turns out Trump's only in it for himself. And he kind of doesn't care that much about the Republicans and what they're going to do with the midterm.
I actually think he is concerned. But at that moment, his brain just doesn't work that way. Because I'm convinced within a couple of days he's going to try and come out and say
he'll say something racist.
Mamdani's a horrible.
Oh, sure. But the damage is done.
He's
already undercut their whole argument.
And here is more of Mamdani not backing off of anything he says. Actually, let's start with five. Okay. And just how Mamdani sort of manipulated Trump. Donald Trump has praised many presidents in office.
Yep.
Andrew Jackson.
McKinley. I'm better than Reagan, better than Lincoln.
Late great Frederick Douglass.
There is one president who is more clearly associated with progressive Democrats and Democrats, for that matter, than any other. And Zoran is about to make Donald Trump sing this guy's praises. Practically, go ahead.
That he did.
And I'll just add one thing to what the president said. Is one thing I also appreciated is in our meeting to appreciate a portrait of FDR and the incredible work that was done with the New Deal and also in thinking about what it can look like when the federal government and New York City government work together to deliver on affordability, it can be transformed.
We have a great portrait of FDR that I found in the vaults that was missing for years. I found it, and I put it up. Democrat, to the best of my knowledge. He's a Democrat. And when the mayor saw that portrait, he said, sir, do you mind if I have a picture taken by that portrait? It's an amazing portrait. I hope the picture comes out good. But it's an amazing portrait in the cabinet room. Yeah. So he's a big fan of the New Deal, I guess, and of FDR. Yes.
This democratic socialism is a big deal.
He took it as a compliment about the decor, basically. He's like, a nice piece of art. That's what I
That's actually
here.
Mine. I found it.
Yeah.
I love the idea of him rooting around the vaults.
National Treasure style.
When was the last time in a Republican Oval Office that FDR was praised by anybody? By anybody. I mean, and this is the only part that ultimately counts in terms of political, materially, we will see what's going to happen. But as a political matter, this could not have gone better. And here is Mamdani not only somehow tricking Donald Trump to allowing him to praise FDR in the White House, and Trump to sort of backing it up, right?
Well, I think Trump maybe has said one thing about FDR, and he likes the fact that FDR served multiple terms past the constitutional limit.
For both New Yorkers, too.
That might be the only thing I think that he's kind of acknowledged in terms of that.
He's always sitting, just like me.
He's hiding a health condition, and just like me.
And just watch how clever he is. Here's number four. I mean, look, I'm just analyzing this in terms of, like, its political value, right? Mamdani needs to be held to account on a lot of different things that are going forward. He needs to deliver the material benefits he's talking about, or he's going to go down as a failure. He needs to do that. But in terms of, like, the political value of this very brief meeting, and, you know, it's Mamdani is now the sort of, like, the center focus of because of the value that the Republicans thought that he was to him and the value he has to progressive, folks and leftists and whatnot. And so here he is being asked, and this is so minor, but it is so well done. Does New York love Donald Trump? And here is how Mamdani answers it, that both signals, like, I'm not going to give anybody a clip that says New York loves Donald Trump, but I'm also going to continue to have, like, a ding dong over here sitting to my left think that, like, I'm
bask
a great guy.
In a compliment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because remember now, the threat was we're going to defund New York's federal money. No Second Avenue subway, no tunnel to New Jersey, no federal other federal projects. We're going to send in the National Guard. And so Mamdani has have material reasons to keep Trump happy, or at least feel not personally offended, because that's the way that Trump ends up governing half the time. But also to maintain his own personal integrity in terms of, like, what he believes in. Not so much, like, I don't think he gives a crap as to how people perceived him in this. It's the message he's delivering. Go ahead.
Turning point, one way or the other. It could go great or it can go in a different direction. And I think you really have a chance to make it great. I appreciate
Mr. President, you say you love New York City. Mr. Mamdani, does New York City love President Trump?
New York City loves a future that is affordable. And I can tell you that there were more New Yorkers who voted for President Trump in the most recent presidential election because of that focus on cost of living. And I'm looking forward to working together to deliver on that affordability agenda.
I got a lot of votes. One or two more. Go ahead.
So there it is. He refuses to say New York loves Donald Trump. He just simply says New York love affordability. And as a factual matter, more people did vote for Donald Trump over an affordability agenda, as opposed to saying, like, you know, people didn't believe Democrats.
And that's where we come, like, where we can be wildly speculative. But I think Trump's pretty transparent, so it's not that hard to be speculative about what was said in the closed-door meeting prior to this, right? Where it seems abundantly clear that Zohran Mamdani went in with, like, the understanding that this person is, as Kamala Harris said on the campaign trail, susceptible to flattery. And it seems like apparently he spoke with Schumer and Jeffries' offices previously, because they have experience, obviously, with him. It's the smart thing to do about how you deal with a guy like this. And he, when Trump brought up Bernie at the beginning, that was really the tell, where it's clear that Zohran Mamdani emphasized the fact that 1 in 10 of his voters voted for Trump in the last election. And then he's going to say this is over a shared agenda of affordability, and that we should work together because you made historic gains in the city, and buttered him up in that way, which is true. I mean, he's using the failure of the Democratic Party to his advantage. And the way that the party has treated him has enabled Trump to see him in that light, in the same way that Bernie Sanders was.
As an outsider.
The first event that I ever covered as an intern when I was at TYT, like, political event, was seeing Trump at his hotel. And it was right after Bernie Sanders had dropped out. And it was just remarkable to watch him try to fold in all of the rhetoric that Bernie had used in order to kind of manipulate it. Obviously, he's a lying con man, but then he says what he needs to say in any room. But he recognizes, at the very least, the power of popular support and what, like, crowds and energy does. Trump knows and understands that fundamentally. And so he doesn't respect, like, the concierge liberalism of Schumer or Jeffries. He knows that Zohran has people power, too. So it backs up his
I'd be willing to bet that Mamdani went into that meeting and the first thing he said, I want you to know that I launched my campaign with a video that I shot on the streets of my my district talking to Trump voters and why they voted for you and would they vote for an affordability and maybe even showed like a clip of it. But there's no doubt in my mind that's the way he opens it up. Like, that's why I understand your appeal in New York's and Trump is then that's it. And Trump sees nothing but like stars.
And who knows?
This guy
where
really
it goes
gets
from here.
Me.
Yeah. And who knows where it goes from here? But I do think that like the Trump also wants a foil. I mean, this is all reality TV for him, right? And he hasn't had an actual foil in this era so far.
Well, he's not using Mamdani as a foil.
Well, I guess, but I do think that in the future, they're going to have some sort of... He thinks that this is an opportunity for good TV, and like he respects the fact that Zoran is good on TV. And they may get along in this moment, but I anticipate there will be clashes later. But that's not necessarily, I think, how Trump views Jeffries and Schumer.
No, definitely not. But
that says everything.
Here is a another example of Mamdani saying stuff in the White House that we haven't heard before. A and B, completely not giving any ground whatsoever in this meeting with Trump and seemingly getting everything.
And you did a piece in all the 9 months around the world. I would like to ask Mr. Mamdani, you accused the U.S. government of committing genocide in Gaza while President Trump was working on peace. Why that?
I've spoken about the Israeli government committing genocide, and I've spoken about our government funding it. And I shared with the president in our meeting about the concern that many New Yorkers have of wanting their tax dollars to go towards the benefit of New Yorkers and their ability to afford basic dignity. And what we see right now is we're in the ninth consecutive year of more than 100,000 school children being homeless in our city. And there's a desperate need not only for the following of human rights, but also the following through on the promises we've made New Yorkers. And I appreciated the meeting we had and the work that we can do.
Do you agree that President Trump didn't do a peace and worked hard to make the peace? Because he worked hard to do the peace in the Middle East and everywhere. What do you agree with that?
I appreciate all efforts towards peace, and I shared with President Trump that when I spoke to Trump voters on Hillside Avenue, including one of whom was a pharmacist that spoke about how President Trump's father actually went to that pharmacy not too far from Jamaica Estates, that people were tired of seeing our tax dollars fund endless wars. And I also believe that we have to follow through on the international human rights, and I know that still today those are being violated, and that continues to be work that has to be done no matter where we're speaking of.
Good. That's what he says. That's what Trump says. Good. Because you know why? Trump heard nothing after pharmacy, dad pharmacy.
But that was the other part. He 100% just sprinkled in anecdotes about Trump's name being all over the city. And it's so cheap. You know, it's a cheap date. You can say that kind of stuff. And Trump is able to come out of it feeling better about the meeting. And I mean, it's just amazing. It's amazing. It really undercut the Republicans, which is primarily what we care about. But it's also an amazing thing to see the way that Chuck Schumer still did not endorse Zoran Mamdani. And Trump is speaking more positively about him than I've seen other Democratic leaders, major Democratic leaders. And that's part of like when we're talking about the Democratic Party not being committed to an authentic Democratic representation in its own ranks. It is the fact that they can't even recognize or harness the popularity because they are so bought off in a way that's intrinsic to Trump. And that looks like play acting in a way as an embrace of democracy or a swell of enthusiasm. And Democrats have allowed that play acting to replace an actual democratic responsiveness, which has harmed the party's brand in addition to committing genocide with it for years and years to come.
Just to give you a sense of what the expectations were of at least the, the MAGA expectations of what was going to come out of this thing. And I would imagine also we know the expectation of what the Democrats were because we watched the Democratic leadership vote in favor of the resolution to criticize socialism or whatever it was, whatever that dumb thing was, because they thought their first reaction is always like, we're going to lose. We need to get into like our crouch with our shield up. And here is Jack Posobiec, Bumble Jack, asking a question of Mamdani. And look what he does when a Trump basically ends it. Like, it's Johnny ball game for these people here.
You're continuing this idea of race-based property taxes.
No, to be very clear,
it's what you said.
No, the use of the term was a description of neighborhoods, not a description of intent.
So you intend to tax the whiter neighborhoods more?
No, we intend to create a fair property tax system because we want a New York City that is not only fair and equitable, but also one that every New Yorker can afford.
Well, Democratic Socialist and New York City Mayor that's not the,
oh, no, there was a, I'm sorry, there was another clip which where we watch him walk away.
Yes, he that's got just very on disappointed. His angle.
Because what happens after that is, and this is the reason why Fox cut this clip, is because Trump starts talking about, like, how, yeah, it's important the city is affordable. Do we not have that clip? I thought I put that in.
That's all right. But we can describe, as they're pulling it up, we can kind of describe it a little bit here. There is like a, there's footage of that lingers on Posobiec after he asks that question, after Mamdani answers. And then as Sam is describing, there, Trump undercuts it as it goes. And Posobiec literally, well, I won't spoil it that much. As
yeah, let's just put it
right
in. Let's play it. This is so we'll watch Posobiec. Look at his face. It will show you the expectations they had for this, and the ultimate. Yeah, this is it. The expectations they had for this. Go ahead. And ultimately, what happens?
Living in New York City under a Mamdani administration.
Yeah, I would. Especially after the meeting. Absolutely.
What makes you comfortable?
We agree on a lot more than I would have thought. I wanted to do it.
There goes. Yep, I'm done. And that's it for me.
What's interesting in that Fox News clip that we started is that he tries to spin it that he had Mamdani quivering.
Oh, yeah. Let's
leave during his question. Yeah.
Who says this?
Posobiec.
Oh, my God.
On some of his most controversial policies, let's bring in the journalist who asked that question, Turning Point USA contributor and veteran Navy intelligence officer, Jack Posobiec. Jack, great to have you on the show. You confronted Mamdani today. The back and forth was great. Did you believe it when he said that he meant to describe neighborhoods, not the people?
No.
Well, Trace, not at all. Again, this was his choice descriptor. He was talking about the specific characteristics of white neighborhoods, and he said that we need to reduce the burden on ethnic minority neighborhoods. And Trace, this is the same type of rhetoric that you hear from cultural Marxists on the campus. You hear it from cultural Marxists when they're in the street with Antifa, and now we're hearing it from a cultural Marxist who apparently is going to be the mayor of New York City.
Apparently.
Yeah. Were you surprised at anything that happened today? People were calling this very cordial. Did you think it would be that cordial, Jack?
Well, I wasn't sure how the president was going to play it. I think that, you know, going in, I think we did certainly think there were going to be more fireworks. We thought that there might be some debate going back and forth. But it looked as though Mamdani, I think, was honestly a little bit timid. He was quivering when I was interviewing him. He had definitely not faced that type of questioning before. I think he was intimidated by the Oval Office, and I think he was intimidated by President Trump. And that's why you didn't get this rhetoric like you had before on the trail, talking about
what? Oh, yeah. Genocide? Talking about what? Like, keep going. Let's see. Wait.
And that's why you didn't get this rhetoric like you had before on the trail, talking about defunding the police, talking about, not just going after ICE agents. He's gotten in the face of ICE agents before, and now all of a sudden he's saying you're going to work with ICE. Trace, I just don't buy it.
Yeah, he didn't say he's going to work. None of that.
Everything he just said.
And here is...
I swear he's talking to his girlfriend. I had him quivering.
He was quivering. Oh, he was quivering so much that I walked away when Donald Trump said, I'm looking forward to living in Mamdani's New York.
This is the part where...
My girlfriend and my boyfriend.
Just to get the raw footage here, this is the part where he's asked about by Posobiec, and we can see the quivering here.
A New York City that is not only fair and equitable, but also one that every New Yorker can afford.
Trump honestly looks, I don't think my father has ever looked more proud. Like, I don't think there's been any more pride. Like, probably not even anything closer than Trump's going like...
It's because he's good on TV.
All of his children just said the same thing you said.
That is all he ever wanted.
Yeah, exactly.
Was a kid that was good on TV and quick on his feet, and then he's just got Tweedledee, Tweedledum, and the one I want to fuck.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, Trump's like, ooh, that's a tough one. And then Mamdani, if Mamdani answers it like competently, Trump is like, oh,
good guy. He's good. He's really good. Well, here's Donald Trump the next day, of course, in celebration of Mamdani's communism. Wearing a red flag
around his.
Yeah. This is a reference only for you, Sam. But he's dressed like Robert Goulet.
Exactly. Yes. He's got his what are those called? Ascot on, because he was obviously impressed by Mamdani's style too. Here we go.
Do you still plan to deploy the National Guard to New York City?
If they need it. Right now, other places need it more, but if they need it, we had a very good meeting yesterday. We talked about that. But if they need it, I would do it. Are you
willing? Okay.
Whatever he wants.
Do you understand that, like, Stephen Miller just started to cry when he heard that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's the other person who I'm just so happy is probably upset about this. Zionist, racist, nativist, Stephen Miller.
So let's just be clear on this. In terms of constituent one, that Mamdani serves, that is the citizens of New York City, he was able. Now, this may change. This may change. But he was able to get Donald Trump to say, like, well, the National Guard thing, we'll see. Probably not. And then he also put this up. He also got Trump to back off of his saying he's going to cut off New York City billions of dollars of federal funds.
Oh, wait, people love me there.
Yeah, why would I do that? The people on the street really love me.
Look at the video. They said they loved me.
I saw the video where they interviewed. Do you know my father went to the pharmacy in Mamdani's district?
Daddy.
My father did. My dad did. Like, so there's a connection there. So as a material, you know, as a material matter, he did that. Now, there's also knock-on effects from that, that you've got, like, Hochul now doesn't want to get to the right of Donald Trump and deny Mamdani what he needs.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like, the knock-on impact of this is dramatic. Then there is sort of, like, the movement impact. Now, the movement impact is helped only if all of it's contingent upon Mamdani being able to do what he said he was going to do. If Mamdani fails, we're going to know him only as the example of democratic socialism, of progressivism failing. Period. End of story.
And he's aware of that. I mean, I think that's why we'll talk about the Jeffries thing later and Chiosse and what went down with DSA. I did not mean to rhyme that. But yeah, like that. But he's aware. This is where Zoran's a special political talent. He's aware of the significance of his victory and what it means for democratic socialism in the country.
And so as a movement matter and in terms of like just the broader politics, we know the Republicans. At least this is what Hakeem Jeffries thought. This is what the Republicans thought. This is certainly what Elise Stefanik was doing. They were going to run against Mamdani. And here is a perfect example of what went wrong for them. This is Todd Starnes. Isn't he from like, he's from some like right wing? Is it the National Review or I can't remember where he's from.
Fox News Radio at the
Fox
very
News
least.
Radio. Maybe he was there.
Yeah.
But like
he's
this,
with Newsmax.
You know,
this
Newsmax.
Is like
okay.
An old school. You know, this is a standard Republican.
At 8:56 a.m. on Friday, scenario: Mamdani enters the Oval Office today, only to be greeted by Tom Homan, who then personally escorts the communists back to Uganda, and then
fanfic.
5 hours later, at 1:40 p.m. I thought Mamdani was supposed to be a fascist dictator. What the heck is going on at the White House?
Hit him with that riz.
Yeah. The only self-identified fascist was Trump. Where he's like, it's fine.
It's fine. It's you can say that. I don't know. It's not a big deal for me.
And so wasn't he supposed to be the ultimate alpha male, Donald Trump? But gosh, that smile just did him in, I guess. Like, but you see why they are threatened by somebody like this who is strong and unambiguous and has people power behind him. because they can't be the strong men anymore. It's all based on perception, and little weaselly, weak liberals are much easier to bowl over in that way than leftists who stand on principle.
Here is Laura Loomer, also very sort of like beside herself.
She knew their relationship was open, but did it have to be him, Don? I said you could hook up with other people, but not him.
We're supposed to approve these first.
Yeah.
Pop this up. What is Elise Stefanik going to campaign on now during her New York gubernatorial campaign, since Zohran Mamdani's policies have been signed off as comfy by the GOP? Notice she didn't say Trump. She's afraid of singling him out. Keep that up there. Is comfy by the GOP. Now, what is the GOP going to attack Democrats for if Donald Trump has embraced, like, even left of the Democrats' policies? Like, if they go out and say, this guy's a socialist I'm running against, he's going to go, thank you. This is what Donald Trump signed off on. She goes, are you still running for governor, Elise? Dems just need to run clips of the presser today to defeat Elise. And you know what? Laura Loomer's right. Laura Loomer's right. This is like, it is hard to imagine Mamdani coming out of this with any more benefit. Like, I just, you know, and again, in a month, Trump could be like, he's actually, you know, I found out his middle name is Kwame, and that changes everything.
He's a silver-tongued devil.
But this exists. This piece of political weaponry exists in real time.
It traveled. It really did. Just because it's just incredibly funny. And also, I think Trump may retreat once, like, the charm waits, you know, the charm wears off. But I just do think that, like, you can't take this press conference back. He's already normalized Zohran and democratic socialism, which is amazing, more so than most of the Republicans and the Democrats in Washington.
All right, just to give you an example to sum this all up before we go to the fun half, show the picture of me. This was a joke picture that we took in studio where I was trying to show how much how much taller. I mean, the joke was he was, you know, Hassan is, he's a very tall guy. Mm-hmm. I am not that short in real life.
You're but, sitting down.
I'm actually crouching, I think, in this instance. But worse. Nevertheless,
weird.
It looks like I'm sitting down. Well, yes, I'm doing that for effect. But the effect being like, oh my gosh, look at this guy. And then we see this picture here. It's almost the exact same thing. Whoa, look at how big you are. Wow. Just amazing. Now, the only other thing I would say, and maybe we'll play this in the fun half. Trump never took his right hand off of his, I'm sorry, his left hand. His left hand was over his right hand like this in almost every second of those 20, 25 minutes. There was one second where he had done like this, and then he remembered to put it back on there. Even when he was leaning over, he kept that, he was covering that hand. Maybe that's the way to make himself feel secure, or maybe it's a way to cover up that little area where they put in the intravenous treatment.
Could
Who
be.
Knows?
Could
I'm not a doctor, so I don't know.
Can't keep my hands to myself.
All right, let's. I gotta hold myself back. Yeah. I just want to touch him. I just want to touch his shirt once. Just let me just touch your suit. Let me just touch.
What's
your
that
suit.
Made out of?
What is that made out of? I just. Gotta,
maybe the Riz is contagious.
Is that a silk tie? Is that a silk tie? I also just noticed that Mamdani wore a blue tie. I wonder if that was sort of like a purposeful contrast. But all right, we're going to head into the fun half of the program. We got to talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene resigning and the disarray that we could be seeing in the Republican caucus. She's resigning, not retiring. And supposedly, there's a lot of talk that there could be more Republicans resigning. They go home for Christmas break, and it's like, why do I want to go back there? In 9 months...
Happened to some kids I knew at college.
I mean, honestly, this is the time. This is like, peak school refusal, as it were. And we're going to talk about the implications of this on the other side in the fun half. Just to remember, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show free of commercials. We got a bunch of them. It's an ad dump at the end of the year. Everybody's got to get their budget spent. You also get to I Am the Show, and most importantly, you allow this show to thrive and survive. Join themajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop. You want a great gift? Give somebody the Majority Report blend. Give them any of their single origin blends. Coffees at justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, hot chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. Matt, Left Reckoning.
Yeah, there's a Left Reckoning Sunday show for patrons who support our show at patreon.com/Left Reckoning featuring Aaron Kowalski from Nebraska. We did the Harvest Report. We talked about the year in farming and all the fun that farmers have been having. And his prognosis for what the future of rural America looks like, which is not great. And also, he's got a new lavalier mic, which means that Prairie Fire Nebraska on YouTube is going to see more content.
Whoa.
And he might even have a bigger announcement later in the year. So you might want to follow that YouTube channel for what Kowalski's got cooking.
All right. See you in the fun half. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
This guy might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.
We are back. Sam Cedar, Emma Viglin, Majority Report, fun half.
Yes.
Short week. Well, not totally short. We're going to have new content on Friday. Thursday, we're going to be off because of Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
That's we're not going to do the show that day because we're celebrating Thanksgiving. And so we decided not to do the show. Apple question says, Alan, what do you think about Rave apples? I've heard they taste like soap. I have not tried a Rave apple. I'm not going to lie.
Rave apple?
I'm not going to take any false, like stolen apple valor.
That's spelled R-A-V-E?
Yeah. Never heard of it. Buckets and Buckets. Are you going to cover Hassan's trigonometry episode or his paid CCP trip?
No, don't care. Thanks.
I may check it. I'm curious to see some video from China.
Yeah, I'm trying to talk to him about the China trip.
I would love to go on a trip like that. But the trigonometry thing, I was not aware that...
I watched Sam Harris's trigonometry appearance, and it was probably the most excruciating time ever. I think I might still be in a latency period for watching trigonometry.
What is that one? Is that with like those two libertarian
guys? Those
two
nerds.
All right. Let's just finish this off with the Mamdani thing, mostly because I got a lot of comments on the fact that I wore a suit as if like I didn't. I've done a lot of cable television in the years. I wore a lot of suits. It's not that big of a deal.
It's been a while, though.
It's been a while. Yes. Particularly since I wore a tie. And I have to say, I was on the set and Herndon came on. And Brian mentioned this first thing to me. He goes, when you saw Stead come on wearing a jean jacket, were you like, I didn't have to wear a tie? And I said, like, that is the only thing I was thinking. I saw him walk through the door. I'm like, God damn it. Why am I wearing this? But here is that. The guy, I can't remember the name of the gentleman. He was nice, but he had a very difficult job to argue anything about the. I mean, it was devastating. I should say this aired Saturday morning, but we recorded it at 5 p.m. on Friday. So I was like watching the press conference in the car to CNN. So
Right. Nobody
knew what to say, I think, on the right at that point.
I'm going to come to you, Terry, on this. How do you feel about that?
Look, I think what we are seeing is two obvious political athletes who are respecting each other. President Trump is a competitor. Zora Mamdani is a competitor. And I want to be clear. I'm not one of the Republicans. I disagree with, like, everything Mamdani has been proposing. And I don't think that he's actually going to solve these problems that New York is facing. However, I respect the campaign that he ran, and I respect the campaign and the issues that he ran on, because very few people in this country that run for public office actually talk about the needs and the crises that people are actually facing every single day. And I think that Zora Mamdani did that better than ever with talking about affordable housing. I wish Republicans would start to get on the ball on that, because if we don't address affordable housing, we're going to lose our country.
And Trump actually mentioned that specifically, yeah. And he said right, we pause. Actually just, agree just like, on making like,
if it. How much of a bet would you have made that a Republican responding to this press conference a half an hour after it's over would basically be bank shot praising Mamdani and having nothing else to say? Like, what kind of bet?
When's the last time that a Republican like that has conceded any point to any Democrat?
And the stuff this guy was willing to argue during it was also sort of like during this whole show was like, boy, dude, I even said to him, I said at the break, I said, you got a very tough job today. And which is the nicest thing I've ever said to a Republican panelist ever. But let's continue, because this is the other point, is that we have been told over and over again by the likes of Chuck Schumer, who still to this day has not acknowledged that Mamdani won.
Yep.
The mayor of his own city. And Jeffries, who held out to the very last moment to endorse Mamdani. They lost on Friday. Do you understand? They lost too.
Mm-hmm.
They look like idiots because they've never been able to do what Mamdani was able to do. And they've lost all of their scare tactics about Mamdani.
mentioned that specifically, yeah. And he said, we actually agree on making housing more affordable. He said, Mamdani wants to increase the supply of housing, and so do I. Honestly, I am not surprised that this happened today. I think that this makes a lot of sense, because I think that they actually are sort of two sides of the same coin politically.
Oh. Yeah, they're movement politicians. They're both people who kind of base their politics
and
kind of...
Go forward to where... I don't buy this. They're on the same side of things. Okay.
Sitting in there, getting along, and they know everybody wants to pay attention, and it is a spectacle, and they're going to give you the show, and that's exactly what they did today, because they both agree. You disagree.
No. I agree, but I have to say...
You've been to the club.
But here's the thing, is that they were trying to make it like... These guys are just showmen. Nothing else is really going on there. There's no stakes. Both sides, blah, blah, blah. And no, that's not what happened there at all.
You mean
all.
The two panelists?
I mean, almost all of, you
even
know,
the framing, yeah. Too.
Go ahead.
Into the club. but I have to say that I thought what Mamdani was able to do today was masterful. He got the president to praise FDR. I mean, if you think about this in terms of, like, who knows what's going to happen months from now in terms of how they're going to get along. But Mamdani, in an hour, was able to essentially blow up the idea of demonizing democratic socialists. So Elise Stefanik is now lost in the middle of the ocean without any tether. Even people like, Chuck Schumer. Even people within the Democratic establishment, even Hakeem Jeffries, who was afraid of Mamdani, that he was going to ruin congressional elections around the country because they were going to run against Mamdani. They can no longer do that.
So let me play one more bit from their exchange. This is...
Yeah, you were on the money. And it is interesting that they were trying to make it just this whole, like, they're both movement politicians thing. What does that mean? The fact, like, they can mobilize voters to the polls? Isn't that the whole...
The populist.
Deal?
They are both populist.
Like, I mean, I don't think it's appropriate to draw comparisons between the two, except to say that, yeah, they've both been...
They're both good politicians.
Yes, they're both good politicians, and they've both also been... eschewed by the party establishment, or were at the start of their basically political careers, and then the popular sentiment behind them made it impossible for the party establishment to deny it, although we're still in the process of seeing if that's possible with Mamdani and the Democrats.
You saw a little bit of this when AOC won, and the whole conversation about do billionaires have a right to exist was inspired by, I think, Dan Riffle, one of her staffers, having that as his username. But George Lakoff, the sort of political theorist, has the don't think of an elephant, where you do not accept your opponent's frame, you just stick to your frame. And this is the first time where the left has forced the right to accept the frame,
yes.
Which is talking about affordable housing. Well, the only thing that they have about affordable housing is the Nazi lie that
yes.
There are undocumented people in the house that you could be living in.
That's when that guy...
And the only reason why they brought
prisons.
That up was in the wake of Mamdani winning. Yeah.
That was what that guy was trying to allude to at the beginning, where he said that we have to take back our country. We need more housing. That's what they basically mean, is the ethnic cleansing of certain kinds of people in order to in some way free up housing. We know that living here in New York City, where there are high vacancy rates at these very, very swanky apartments, that this is not in many parts of the country, there is a supply issue. But in many other ways, it's not a supply issue primarily. It is a corporate gouging and greed and over-commodification problem.
And deporting immigrants and denying refugee claims is not going to solve it a little bit.
Well, it may help crash the economy. I mean, we're seeing the tariffs are potentially doing that. And we know that when we lose this kind of immigrant labor, that it has a deleterious effect on a lot of our industries. So if that might bring prices down, yes. But that's the Republican plan for bringing prices down, is crashing the frickin' economy.
Make fun half again. Sam Cedar looking like my defense attorney in that suit. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Let's turn to the other big news that dropped on Friday night, which is that Marjorie Taylor Greene announced her resignation.
Hi, everyone. I've always represented the common American man and woman as a member of the House of Representatives, which is why I've always been despised in Washington, D.C., and just never fit in. Americans are used by the political industrial complex of both political parties, election cycle after election cycle, in order to elect whichever side can convince Americans to hate the other side more. And the results are always...
All right, well, the long and short of this is that...
Sam, there was 10 minutes left.
The long and short is she is resigning on January 5th. And the important thing that you should know about this... Well, there's a couple of things.
Christmas tree before Thanksgiving?
Okay. Let's... Exactly. Well,
it's
let's,
messaging.
Let's talk about the this. Marjorie Taylor Greene, this is reported... this was reported a month ago. Well, I guess like 3 weeks ago, which is interesting. Why it was reported then. But Marjorie Taylor Greene is an American business person and politician who currently serves as the member of U.S. Congress from Georgia's 14th district. And let's go down. When Marjorie Taylor entered office in 2021, her net worth was about $700,000. You've got to disclose like your assets. Marjorie Taylor Greene, 4 years later, she joined Congress in 2021 in January, so it'll be 5 years as of January 26th. She is now worth $25 million.
God is good.
$25 million. Her net worth has risen, I can't do the math, so I'm going to go under, 25 times, but it's really probably closer to like 35, 700,000. Like, what is it? Wait, like, how did she do this? How did she do this? Now, let me be clear. We see this all the time with the worst of the worst in the House. I can guarantee you that AOC, who entered into Congress in 2018 with a net worth of much less, has not increased her net worth by 25 times. This is all from Marjorie Taylor Greene making really, really smart investment decisions that she didn't make in the years before she entered Congress. Mm-hmm. But then, as I think
she locked in.
She locked in. She really did. This now is time for me to focus. And this is undoubtedly insider trading. Her wealth comes from majority ownership in her family's construction business, which also increased. Now, I don't know like where that money came from necessarily or how that increased so dramatically over 4 years. There must have been a lot of building going on in Georgia over the past 4 years that her company could be worth that much. Stunning.
She had PPP loans forgiven, if I recall.
I have no doubt.
For Taylor Commercial.
Here that she invested in Palantir about 3 days before a huge contract was awarded.
Oh, she was very smart about that. Yeah. yes. Marjorie Taylor Greene bought Palantir shares days before ICE granted a tech giant. I mean, it's on and on and on.
God is good.
Scroll down. Let's see how much she got in there.
God is good.
Yep. She just prayed and it came to her because she was deserving.
Scroll up. Sorry. Scroll She's up. On the scroll up right there. She sits on the House Committee of Homeland Security, which oversees the agency. ICE apart. Wow.
I had a feeling.
Then you had that Twitter handle, unusual. This is unusual trading by a politician. Marjorie Taylor Greene bought Palantir on April 8th. On April 17th, Palantir was awarded a government contract with ICE to develop immigration.
Praise Jesus.
Oh, Palantir is up nearly 50%. That is, listen, they say Republicans are much better with money. Now we understand that.
Well, we should give credit because this is bipartisan. On the subway here, I saw an ad for like a retail stock trading app that had Nancy Pelosi's face on it. So,
There's
an app that tracks
you
her
can
trading.
Get an app that tracks her trading.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean,
I legitimately
Nancy Pelosi
have a friend who made a lot of money
definitely
off that app.
Doing. Oh, without a doubt.
Yep.
this is why AOC was trying to lead a push to keep houses of members from trading stocks.
I mean, and, I think Pelosi ended up saying, oh, I agree with that later on in her career. I mean, she's cashed out quite enough and she's retiring. But
how much do you agree? You want to return some of that money?
How much ice cream can you buy?
But that's like a cheap kind of populist thing that every Democrat should get behind. And the ones that aren't are absolutely
making a huge killing on it.
Well, they're making a huge killing. And they're also just like indicative of the rot in the party. The fact that we can't draw a contrast with these freaks is... a result of them.
There's a lot of people who perceive going into government, going into politics as a way of making money. And it's very hard, I think, for some of us to sort of conceive of this, because you go and you do it because you're committed to making things better for people, that it's not like a mechanism to drive your business interests.
Exactly. And like, I saw some critique saying that this is because of her pension. Apparently she's going to get $8,700 annually beginning in 11 years.
Well, I think 14 grand annually or something, but whatever.
Either way, that is not how people get rich in Congress. In fact, we should be paying our members of Congress more. I would be down to double their salaries so they're less dependent on outside money like this. We see an extreme version of that in Texas, where all of these representatives down there, they make like, I don't know, very low five figures or something like that. They only work part of the year. They do this so that you can have like a revolving door of small business people or people that can get paid by interests that are outside of the government. And so if you were to pay our representatives a more lucrative like wage, that would also be measure up to their public profile, right? I mean, there are sacrifices in that way that come with it.
You got to have two homes.
Yeah, well, that's true, right? Like Marjorie Taylor Greene with her 25 mil can have at least two homes, and like Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib have to be in the same boat. That shouldn't be the case.
It's the same structural problem with like, say, media internships, where you need to be basically from a wealthy family in order to be able to do an internship, because they don't actually pay enough, and they know that it is intentional that it's kept that way. And the whole like, oh, they're voting for a raise for themselves, sort of faux populism, is just them cynically knowing that they want to maintain the system where everyone needs a corporate daddy to get money, can't come around campaign season.
Okay, now there's more to this story. So Marjorie Taylor Greene is leaving Congress, and what that does is it starts to make the very, very thin majority that the Republicans have even thinner. Let me look at this breakdown here. I thought I had it written down, the actual numbers. But Punchbowl reports on this. The crux of MTG's message is that Trump and the House Republicans are abandoning all of the president's priorities, falling into complacency, and are on the brink of squandering their razor-thin majority. We had been speculating for a while that she was doing this stuff because she was iced by the president in that Senate run that she wanted to do in Georgia. And she got pissed. And she realized, like, there's no path for her. And then AOC spilt that tea also. Mm-hmm. So that was fairly obvious. And I think what happened is she realized, like, I have no future in this party. And I've made $25 million over the past 5 years, which is a pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty good.
It's sort of mid-level NBA salary.
Nothing to sneeze at.
Right.
Okay. And she's like, I'm going to get while the getting's good. And I'll stay an extra 2 weeks so that I can get vested in my pension and I probably get health care. Why wouldn't I?
And she wouldn't have to take future votes that could be an issue for her future political career if she has one.
And you know what? She doesn't have to run in this race because she was worried she was going to get primaried. So she's not going to have to spend down any of her money or actually go through the effort associated with this. And then she's thinking like, well, if I win, all I'm going to do is win to serve in the minority, and that sucks.
Yep.
You don't get the same like benefits, and who knows when we'll be back in the majority. because the Republicans are starting to think they're going to get slaughtered in the midterms. And it's hard to come up with a scenario where they don't at least lose the House. Whether it's going to be a slaughter, who knows? So just right now, we have 219 Republicans and 213 Democrats. If Democrats win in Tennessee, and you're going to be interviewing that candidate,
Afton Bain,
and she's actually a really good candidate, regardless of, but in Tennessee, it's like a plus 22 Republican seat. But right now,
Republicans are worried.
Everything's on the table. They're pouring money into that race. Emma's going to talk to her on Wednesday. So if the Democrats win in Tennessee, unlikely, but very possible, it'll be 219 to 214. Then Marjorie Taylor Greene leaves in January. Then it's 218 to 214. After the Texas special election on January 31st, it's going to be 218 to 215 because it's a Democratic seat. That's definitely a Democrat's going to win there. In April, if Democrats hold New Jersey's 11th special, it would be 218 to 216. Now, Marjorie Taylor Greene's replacement is scheduled for March. Presumably, the Republican will win that. But you should know that the Tennessee race, Tennessee's 22nd, is in the very close to Marjorie Taylor Greene's district. Mm. And I don't know if they're in the same market, but if you get to 218 to 216 or 219 to 214, things are very, very thin. And then in this story that is in Punch Bowl today, a few other members of the Republicans messages over the weekend saying that they too are considering retiring in the middle of the term. Understand, like, why you would do this. If you know you're going to lose, running an election is no fun. Mm-hmm. and if you think, even if I win, all I'm going to do is come back and have no ability to do anything and get treated like even worse garbage I am now, because they're saying, this is what some Republicans said. The entire White House team has treated all members like garbage, all. And Mike Johnson has let it happen because he wanted it to happen. That's the sentiment of nearly all appropriators, authorizers, hawks, doves, rank and file. The arrogance of the White House team is off-putting to members who have run roughshod and threatened. Members know they're going into the minority after the midterms. More explosive early resignations. Are coming. It's a tinderbox. Morale has never been lower. Mike Johnson will be stripped of his gavel and they will lose the majority before this term is out.
Inshallah. I mean, why are they complaining? Because didn't you guys vote in your own way to give away your own power to the president and actively participated in the neutering of your own body? And then when it looks like the honeymoon's over and you're going to lose your seat, then you're complaining that you don't have power anymore? I mean, tough shit.
Understand, okay, this dynamic is so important. Now, I'm not sure it's necessarily a positive for the Democrats to get the House before, the election. Maybe it could be. This is a Punch Bowl article. We got it on, pop it up here. I want to go down to... the calendar. Scroll down a little bit. Back up. The calendar. It's in red. Scroll back down. Okay. You passed it. Go slow. It's right. The calendar. The legislative climate is brutal. Enhanced Obamacare premium subsidies expire at the end of December. Trump is supposedly proposing a plan today. It would include an extension of the subsidies so Republicans can come up with their own long-term proposal. This will split the Republicans on Capitol Hill. And then government funding expires on January 30th. The amount, remember, all of these Republicans are afraid to have town halls because they're tired of getting, harassed, harangued, etc. If you have a Republican congressman, if you are in a Republican district, it is time for you to work the phones and complain. very nicely complain. And complain not as a Democrat, but as a Republican. Because you want to make, you want the word, you want that staffer to go back and go, I'm getting Republican complaints that you could say, I can't believe that you're even contemplating extending Obamacare subsidies. I hate Obamacare. Obama's a communist socialist, and I don't like the president praising Zohran Mamdani. And this is, you've got to call and just be, make them feel like their own voters are upset. And some of you might be the straw that breaks the camel's back, that forces, or just like one of your Republican congressmen will be like, F this, I'm done. I had too much of a fun time those 6 weeks off when we didn't have to do anything. And then Christmas break, and I'm like, I don't want to go back to D.C.
Right.
I'm going to save some cash. I'm going to, you know, stop renting that apartment in D.C. I'm going to come back. And
I won't have to rent my mistress's apartment either.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't have to deal with the girlfriend in D.C. and then the girlfriend here and then the wife. It's just going to be just the girlfriend here and the wife. And who knows? I mean, it's dialing for dollars in this instance for you. It's just that the payoff could be, it's like, you know, like fifth caller. You win, you know, a free toaster or whatever it is. So folks should get on that. This it'll be interesting to see how they handle this.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll believe it when I see it too. We're hearing about, you know, we'll see these resignations, but I was taken aback by Marjorie Taylor Greene doing this. I wonder what she does next. Media, I would be my guess. Her husband's
got $25 million just to be an influencer.
Yeah. I mean, what, she can join Minect now.
I got small ball.
He just wanted to bring that in.
That's beneath her.
I learned about it this morning.
Minect sounds like a hemorrhoid cream.
It really does.
We should also say there's an interesting story in Politico about how from Texas to Pennsylvania to Ohio, Democratic-backed candidates ran successful campaigns in the nation's largest school systems and political battlegrounds. The salience of the culture war for Republicans is at an all-time low. It'll come back up. But what's happening is that there is enough anger amongst Democratic voters. They are just engaging and they're seeing the implications of electing a bunch of fundamentalist lunatics to the Board of Education. And these people were able to sort of like generate enthusiasm on their side by hatred of trans people, by hatred of gay people, by hatred of brown people. And parents have basically said, I guess I have to engage in this stuff now. And they have. In addition to Texas, Republicans lost seats in the suburbs of Columbus, Ohio, and the national battleground of Pennsylvania. Because local leaders are now starting to actually engage. Engage. So this is probably the most positive show we've had in
quite a while.
And Republicans are in complete disarray. It's going to be interesting to see what Trump comes up with. It's basically going to be these sort of like health savings accounts, which who knows if people are going to be eligible. It's basically encouraging people just to get catastrophic health insurance. That's what the plan is.
Now, juice the market along the way.
And juice the market a little bit along the way. I don't know how effective they'll be. The rates are still going to go up. From the insurance company's perspective, putting money in health HSA plans don't necessarily do anything to enhance the risk pools. So we'll see. We'll see. All right. Should we do oh, this is amazing.
Okay, yeah.
Now, when was this episode? When was this posted?
It was maybe last November 3rd.
Okay.
Earlier this month.
So this is an old one. So, you know, now I just want to be fair up front. This was Patrick Bet-David's idea in early November. He may have changed.
Yeah.
He may have a different perspective on this. Right. But he has a way of helping out Israel. Is that what this clip is?
Yeah, this is it, well, I mean, this is maybe tough medicine, but this is, if Israel wants to take it, it would be, you know, a major step forward, according to Patrick.
Meaning, like, if Israel were to accept some sort of punishment from, like, the United States for committing a genocide, like, you don't get the Iron Dome, or you don't get all these offensive weapons.
No, there's a different process that PBD
suggests. It's not just a question of punishment.
Oh, so like courts.
It is how to, well, it's how to bring about justice in this situation, broadly speaking.
Truth and reconciliation.
It is. Almost in some ways like a truth and reconciliation committee. It's this is high level stuff. So let's play.
Would be it, instead of dude, it was his name.
You know what Israel, you want to know what Israel needs?
Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, you know what Israel needs? Uh-huh. I'm going to tell you what Israel needs.
A big brother?
No, let me tell you what Israel needs. Oh my God, they need this. If they have the brass to do it. If they have the brass to do it. Are you ready?
Okay.
Oh my
this
God.
Is going to be the craziest idea I'm going to put out there. And please, if you support it, cut it, clip it, put it on X, and let's see what people
pause
say about
it. Pause
it
for one second. I just want to say that you can actually have a one-to-one with Patrick Bet-David on Manect. And I saw this from watching a clip from, Silly and Billy. What is the
Vanguard.
Vanguard. I was watching the Vanguard, and I found this out from them. You can actually get a one-on-one with Patrick Bet-David where he can give you advice. And like he's about to like drop an incredible piece of advice for Israel here. He can give you this piece of advice, this type of advice, for only $800 a minute.
Oh, my God. A minute?
A minute.
What a deal.
So let's make
probably
sure.
Probably charge that, Israel more.
Let's time this to see how long it would take for him to articulate the this quality of an idea.
But it's rare to see somebody come up with something on the fly like this, like an entrepreneur just have this kernel of an idea. Yeah, I mean, to see somebody work in this way on camera,
I feel like he's formulated this.
Oh, yeah. No, he came that's up with thing. It just now. I mean, at the very least, that's how he's reacting.
But that's what I'm saying. We need more business people in politics. This is just clearly what
okay. Yeah,
all right, go back. Let's play.
I'm going to tell you what Israel needs.
A big brother?
No, let me tell you what Israel needs. Oh, my God, they need this. If they have the brass to do it. If they have the brass to do it. Are you ready?
Okay.
This is going to be the craziest idea I'm going to put out there. And please, if you support it, cut it, clip it, put it on X, and let's see what people say about it. I believe the way to save Israel, for them to be humbled, is Israel needs a roast like the Tom Brady roast. Put Netanyahu in the middle, bring Kevin Hart, Andrew Schultz, Dave Smith, bring who's the guy, Kill Tony, who is the other guy, who's the other guy that plays Biden?
Tony
not Tony Hinchcliffe, the other guy.
That was Shane Gillis.
He was Shane Gillis. Bring Shane Gillis, bring all of these comedians and let him do a 3-hour roast on Israel. Let him make so
I'm available
much
for hire
them,
for writing.
So much of it. And if you can take it, then the world is finally going to be like, all right, let's move on. We got it out
all
of
all right,
system.
I don't care about those babies anymore.
Yeah.
Oh. Those paid people sitting next to him will have to pretend it's a good
running.
Idea.
Let it keep running for a second. I just want to see the reaction of people around it. 800, how do we have a time on that? This is probably less than a minute or two. That's only a $1,600 idea, man. And that is like, you don't think Israel would pay $1,600 to get the whole world off their back?
BB would love to be on that stage.
The real the progressives have actually become regressives.
BB just, in order for the world to validate the taking of the West Bank, BB just needs to get through 3 hours of Tony Hinchcliffe saying.
Honestly, actually,
I just
3 hours of
I just heard Dave Smith's jokes about me. And I thought he was a libertarian, not a librarian. He's so boring.
Oh, oh God.
Well, because BB gets to come up and make jokes right on the roast. He gets to make jokes about them.
Who's going to write for BB?
It's fun of them. So much of it. And if you can take it, then the world is finally going to be like, all right, let's move on. We got
let's
it out of our system.
Let's move on.
But they won't let it happen.
Yeah.
Did you understand what I just
100%.
Said?
Yeah.
Well, did you understand?
It's the flipping only child syndrome. I'm somebody that knows your enemy. I live with your enemy for freaking 11 years. This is just give me a flipping break.
What?
Man, it's like
this. Is he talking about Iran?
What is he talking about now? He's like,
is he talking about living in Iran?
No, I think I can't tell if he's talking about people reacting to him right here or what.
Oh, maybe people are laughing at him off screen and he's realizing that hasn't infotained them.
Keep going.
All right, we're gonna take it back a little bit because that was a sharp turn into like a breakdown.
Well, he's having to ask them, "Do you understand what I'm saying?" And people are like, Yeah,
we get it.
We get it. We know what a roast is.
Let's bring all of these comedians and let them do a 3-hour roast on Israel. Mm-hmm. Let them make so much fun of them, so much of it. And if you can take it, then the world is finally going to be like, all right, let's move on.
What
we got
it
out of our
system. What
does
"if you can take it" mean? Like the country doesn't the whole country decide we're moving. Right. We're moving to Uganda after all because of what you said to us.
Or if they don't nuke the 7 neighboring countries, we're talking shit.
Right, this could be a very risky proposition. Yeah. You get the wrong joke from Kevin Hart and they just take out Lebanon.
Lebanon's like,
Gillis is up there and he just takes a sip and just keels over.
Polonium or whatever that shit is in his cup.
I mean, has he done a downside like assessment of this kind of risky maneuver? Because we really could start World War III.
The most defensive people on Earth.
Yeah.
And let him do a 3-hour roast on Israel. Mm-hmm. Let him make so much fun of them, so much of it. And if you can take it, then the world is finally going to be like, all right, let's move on. We got it out of our system.
Yeah.
But they won't let it happen.
Nope.
Did you understand what I just
100%.
Said?
Yeah. Of course.
It's the flipping only child syndrome. I'm somebody that knows your enemy. I live with your enemy for freaking 11 years. This is just give me a flipping break. Man, it's like this is so much. Stop it already. It's the only child syndrome. Guess what happens when you go to the army? Everybody makes fun of everybody in the army. Do you know how brutal it is? Do you know how many nasty jokes we would say about each other? And there was always that handful of kids that couldn't take it.
Yep.
Hey, drill sergeant, I want to get out of the army and I want to ETS. Okay, no problem. Dishonorable discharge.
Mm-hmm. An ETS
but
is not
you're living in the social media world. You're going to get it every day. Now.
This is way more wild than that 1-minute clip. What is happening?
He's saying that Israel has to learn to take the criticism and then everything will be fine.
Why does he keep calling them the only child? Like,
they're just not used to the ribbing.
They're literally.
What is happening? I want to make fun of it.
But I do think, like, he can't conceive of any form of justice except, like, a frat boy-esque roast takedown.
I think he's going to get around to it.
Okay, is he going to cry more?
He's gonna bring it home. Yeah, it sounded like his voice broke there.
Yeah.
Do I believe the other side spends money on bots? Yes, you got a couple billion Muslims. And how many total Jews are there in the world? What's the population? 15 million people?
15? Yeah.
Do I believe they're playing games to pin the world against Israel? I do. Do I believe they're playing games to pin everybody against Jews? I do. Do I believe there are a lot of people that, you know, want to see these things increase even more? I do. Do I believe that, Israel, every year we give them $3 billion? Yes, but we force them to buy 80% of the money with the $3 billion. They get to buy military contractors. It's kind of like me saying, I'm going to give you $100, Vinny, but guess what? I want you to spend $80 of it and buy equipment from Tom, who has a business in America.
Okay.
Money's coming back to me. 20% staying with you. Here's the way of me giving you some equipment. Yes. I'm getting it back anyways, right? Yep. It's a flywheel. The business coming back to me. Do I believe the $2-3 billion? We give Israel $3 billion every year. We gave SNAP of people that are from other countries $70 billion last year. None of you are bitching about it. Israel has such.
Wait, what?
So food for over 40 million people, many of them children in our country, food assistance versus bombs to blow children up. That's the comparison.
$70 billion for
undocumented immigrants on SNAP. That doesn't, you should know that they're not eligible for SNAP.
Yeah.
He thinks the people's problem with Israelis is that they're annoying and they can't take a joke. It's like it's vaguely anti-Semitic.
You know, a little bit. I saw the whole 10, 20,000 kids killed. But, you know, when I saw when Andrew Schultz was roasting Netanyahu, and Netanyahu took it like a champ.
Well, isn't
tabula rasa.
Yeah, exactly. even in their wildest dreams.
Yeah, they're saying tabula rasa.
Even in their wildest dreams, they can't conceive of a punishment stronger for Israel than just hurt feelings.
This is he goes on. There's more about the only child syndrome.
He sees himself in Israel because of negative comments he gets on his YouTube channel.
I get it. But where are we at only child? Who is the what other countries have siblings? Is my question then in this situation? But
from other countries, $70 billion last year. None of you are bitching about it. Israel has such an easy messaging to do. But because they're the only child syndrome, spoiled, you're acting like a spoiled brat. And quite frankly, it's unattractive. You make it tough for people that support you to support you. And I can't believe I said this right now. But honestly, it's like,
it's
give it a flip and break already. You know what? Do the roast. Baby, go do the roast. If not, Bibi, who else is the biggest person like that to do the roast? Who's the face of the Israel? Is it? It's really only Bibi, right?
Can you
do you guys
it?
Remember?
Okay, we're working backwards from the roast. We've already decided on the roast.
Do the roast. It's happening.
Bibi, you're going to do it?
You got to have Bibi do it. I wish we could see like the feed from the other looks on the faces of other people there, like to see if they're going like, is this
Patrick okay?
Do the roast.
Do it. It's
about being bullied in the military.
Just picturing their mortgages in their heads, and they're like, oh, yeah, the roast is a great idea, boss. Yeah, great
roast,
idea, boss.
Roast, of course, roast.
Yeah, yeah. Roast the shit out of them. Smotrich, too.
But genius. It's also perfect because roasts are also usually, and tell me if I'm wrong, Hollywood people, but like carefully booked for like often outsized press attention, or if somebody's career is on the decline, they want to change the narrative
Do you think that this wouldn't actually get a lot of press?
No, I'm saying that
you don't
it would.
Get the idea of the roast. That's the problem.
I mean, roast is very much like to democracy what the town hall was in the 1800s.
They got to do the roast. They got to do the roast.
No, but the point would then be the reclamation of Israel to humble them in the minds of the public, which I don't necessarily think people think is what we want out of this situation. We just don't want our tax dollars going to genocide. Not like a more humble.
Yeah, take them down a peg.
Not like Netanyahu with a little bit of a
crusty
frown.
Crusty Gnome has a great suggestion. Itamar Ben-Gavir, you're getting a roast.
You're getting a roast.
Right? Like, that's the thing. Go up. Show that, yeah, okay, your policies are fascist, but and fascistic and completely racist, but you're good at taking a joke. That's the important thing.
That's all that matters.
Be like a happy warrior. That is just...
I heard what you guys said he said before the show. I didn't anticipate the emotional breakdown.
Yeah.
And
to be honest, I didn't either. Yeah. I didn't get that.
I also like that he's such a CEO that he comes up with an idea and then a minute later he's screaming about how it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
What? Just do the roast that I came up with 30 seconds ago.
Also, his like hucksterism of like he has these sort of psychological concepts like the only child syndrome.
Yeah,
that he just leans on so hard. It's like because Israel has the only child syndrome. I don't know. I think settler colonialism probably yeah. better a framework to talk about Israel than right. only child syndrome.
The only child things is that the only Jewish majority country in the region.
Oh, okay.
I think that's the only child thing.
Right. Don't quite get it.
Now
they have the only child syndrome where they're spoiled.
Yeah. Right.
They're spoiled, and they're used to having people. But what?
And
okay,
they're whiny.
Let's say they're the only Jewish country in the region. How is that the only child syndrome? Isn't the only child syndrome that you're used to being spoiled?
It would yes. be more the
who's
black
been
sheep.
Spoiling? Yes,
right.
Who's been spoiling Israel?
The U.S.
Oh, I guess that's it.
Yeah, the U.S.
Oh, I see.
In England.
So the U.S. is the only. Okay, I got it. Well, in that case, yeah, let's do the roast.
Okay.
now I get it. We should do the roast.
Right, do the roast.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is true, but Gino texted me that said there's a minimum for Manect, though. So it's a 15-minute minimum, which makes it 12K.
No, that is like what we're talking about, all this gambling crypto stuff on the internet. Where is this money coming from? Who's it coming from? Like, there's no oversight. This is the wild, wild west with this crap.
The Vanguard's theory about the Manect thing is that it's like a money laundering scheme.
Well, that makes sense.
100% is.
I mean, it sure sounds like it would be easy to do money laundering through it. Who knows? But I will say it ties in. The underlying business that he has now, he used to do that that insurance company where the main thing they would sell would be membership into a company that sells insurance.
Right.
But now what he does, apparently, what I was told was that it's like a business consulting. And so this is an extension of that consulting.
Just the
business.
Head of the Sinaloa cartel is spending $15K to hang out with him for a minute to launder some money.
What? Like I don't know.
That's
how
exactly
that would work.
It. That's
no, it's a really important service where you can give consulting to people. And I would just like to announce at patreon.com/leftreckoning a new tier called Matt Lecht, and you can join it for $15 Lecht a month, necked. And you can email me.
Lectekect?
Well, Lecknect.
Wouldn't it be Lectekect?
Lecknect.
Lecknect.
Lectekect. Lecknect.
I'll consult for you.
If you need the worst business advice ever.
Yeah.
I honestly want
to give it to your workers.
I want to meet the people who've done the $800 a minute with a minimum of 15 minutes.
Do you think that they even say anything, or they just put the phone on speakerphone and walk around the room for a half hour?
Well, the real question is like, wait, am I going to pay for the like minute or minute and a half or 2 minutes that it takes me to ask my question? Like, don't I need right. to give you some context?
Yes. My time is valuable.
No.
Unless you like called up and asked like, what do you like better? Cheeseburgers or hamburgers?
You're like, Patrick, I got caught cheating on my wife. Here's what you need to do. You need to let her roast you. You go down the American Legion, you rent the hall out for the night, you let her roast you in front of everybody.
I'm going to give you the same suggestion I gave to Israel. I gave this country to be this advice to Bibi Netanyahu, and he didn't follow it.
He didn't
now
follow
you see Israel.
No, I assume
trouble.
He saw it. I mean, I don't know. I didn't say it directly to him, but yeah. He watches. He watches because he pays me.
Right, his number two has a Manect call with me coming up where he has a really pertinent question. We'll be on the line for an hour. Don't worry about it.
I don't know if I want to do What's Her Faith, girl. Is that
you
one?
Can't do it right now?
I don't know if I can.
We did it Friday, I think, right?
But there's new developments on this.
No, well, she's going around on. Jeff. We're talking about. Let's do it tomorrow.
Okay.
It's too.
This woman, this liberal Zionist woman, is just absolutely out of control.
It's stunning. It's almost, it's like, do you think that nobody is like, you're on a book tour. You see the video cameras in front of you. Like, do you realize people are listening to this?
Yeah, well, I mean.
I just don't understand.
That's why it's instructive, to be honest.
I just don't understand.
I saw it. Maybe people are taking her out of context. I'm joking.
Matt wants to connect on the next.
Let's check in with Graham Plattner, shall we?
We shall.
This is pretty good stuff.
Let me tell you something, brother.
Well, you know, here's the thing. There's some. There have been the not unbalanced complaints about Graham Plattner. I mean, there are some who think that it's been a long con. That like 5 or 6 years ago, his plan was to infiltrate the progressive left and to become senator of Maine so that he could then show his real conservative bona fides and be have a voting record marginally worse than Susan Collins. This was the long-term strategy. We're gonna get rid of Susan Collins and have a real, even further right senator. Aside from that, there are people who have legitimate questions about whether Plattner has really changed his perspective on things. So let's play this clip number 25. And he is asked at. And he's been having, as far as I can tell, sold out campaign stops all across Maine. And to sell out these venues, I mean, Brian, you could speak to this. It's a lot of people. Like, he's probably, like,
I'm shocked, actually.
Been in front of, you know, a significant portion of Maine voters.
Looks like 20-30% of the, I mean, there's only a million people in the state.
I mean, by sellout, you also mean like not the you know, just showing up, right?
Yeah, there's spillover rooms. Yeah. And
there's been spillover rooms to the spillover rooms.
Yes.
Like, and
I'm just trying to clarify, he's not charging people, like, right?
Oh, no, he's doing huge ticket sales. He charges $800 a minute to watch him speak. But here is a question that was given to him in Bucksport, Maine. This is about a week and a half ago. A woman confronts him. We only have audio of it. We're going to play the audio. A woman confronts him about what he said in the past about things about sexual assault and whatnot.
In his Reddit posts.
In his Reddit posts. And this, I think, is a very fair question.
The day that the Reddit post dropped, my heart sank. Particularly for one reason. Your comments on sexual assault victims cut deep. I am a survivor. My story is remarkably similar to the one that you outlined in that comment. I never shared my story. I never reported it. And I didn't because I knew I would be defending myself against that mentality. For more than 20 years, I have never spoken of it until today. I have consumed every interview you have done since. To the point where it's pretty creepy, honestly. I But I realize that what I am seeking is a sign of true growth and understanding of how harmful that mentality has been. Of an expression of true remorse for ever thinking that it would ever be anybody's fault that someone else violated them so egregiously. So I'm asking right now, can you look me in the face as a survivor and offer me more than just shallow words?
I am sorry. I am sorry because I certainly at earlier points in my life held opinions that I do not hold now. When I made that comment 13 years ago, I had come out of the infantry, and I had a frankly myopic worldview on this issue. In the years since, I have become very close friends with many women, veterans and non-veterans, who all have stories. And I have through those relationships, I have very much begun to, not just understand, but I firmly believe abuse, sexual assault, is not a matter of decisions people make. It's a matter of power. It's a matter of who has power and who wants to impose it on someone else. It is never the responsibility of the person who's been imposed upon. It is always the abuser. It is always the person with power who is responsible. I do not believe now, and have not a long time, that it's the responsibility of people, of those who get assaulted. But I had to learn that. I had to learn that through relationships I built. And I had to learn that through friends who told me stories, very brutal ones. And I have learned that. I also fully recognize that as I continue moving forward in my life, because of who I am, because of the life that I've lived, I will have blinders on that I'm unaware of. And it is incredibly important to me to develop relationships with people who can tell me and show me and let me know where I'm falling and let me know where I'm failing. I am sorry for the things I used to say, for the jokes I used to make. I have no excuse for it. I will say that in the time since, in the intervening years, I've developed a very different opinion on this. And moving forward, I would very much like to continue getting that input, because I don't think of myself as a fully formed human being. I don't think anybody ever will be. And if anybody thinks they are, we should probably not trust them.
There was we got a bit of an applause after this, actually.
Thanks, sir.
You know, this is good. He's putting himself out there. He's being asked these difficult questions by Maine voters, which is going to be important going into if he does beat
Mills.
It's going to be important when he goes up against Collins. I mean, from my perspective, that is the one of the most important things about Plattner is his ability to beat Collins, I think, in a way that Mills is not capable of doing.
Yep.
Because they are simply too similar. There's not enough contrast. Mills herself has complimented Collins. I'm not even talking like 2 years ago. I'm talking like 2 months ago.
I mean, they both don't want to get rid of the filibuster. They're both centrists for the most part within the context of American politics. I mean, what Plattner represents is a new way of doing politics. And like, you know, we can have people write in saying DSA should run somebody, X, this should happen, X should, that he doesn't have a clean record, he's got a, you know, we should have somebody different. Oh, the cat's out of the bag here. I mean, that's not even the right phrase for it, but basically then pick somebody.
The
then
other
find
guy
your
who was in the race
candidate.
From the mothership has jumped into the Jared Golden race.
Yeah, the momentum has already begun. If you have a better alternative from your keyboard, then you can float that to people within Maine. But you're seeing that there's an actual genuine reaction on the ground to his candidacy. And I care about that because I care about democracy, not necessarily, you know, I don't know, like having some of these more niche critiques as people begin to identify with this campaign in a way I think is really positive, especially because he doesn't take corporate PAC money. He is very aggressively against the genocide in Gaza. I saw yesterday he was tweeting about how the critiquing the media, and I think he led the way for, was it Hakeem Castro or somebody else in Congress, or gosh, no, maybe not in Congress. I'm forgetting who it was, but to basically say like the media needs to stop reporting on this as if the ceasefire is still holding.
Right.
I mean, Plattner getting ahead of that, it says a lot to me. And the fact that he doesn't take any, you know, Israel lobby money too. But yeah, so.
And here is Plattner also talking about something that I think there's real question in the Democratic Party. We're seeing this as a burgeoning thing to campaign on. He is out in front of it. There are Democrats who have a real problem with this. And I don't mean like they take issue with what he's saying. I mean, have a real problem in terms of relationships with big tech. Chuck Schumer, for one, is one of these people. There are some of your faves out there who get money from big tech. You asked Ro Khanna, what was it, a year and a half ago?
It was
2 years ago?
Over 2 years ago, really right before, like 2 or 3 weeks before the genocide started. I asked him about, will you commit to not doing any more fundraising with David Sacks? And he said no.
And David Sacks, mind you, is the crypto czar in the Trump administration. And the crypto has been ground zero of the way that the Trump family has enriched themselves. Now,
I mean,
to be fair, there's a lot of other ways that they've enriched themselves. But the crypto has been a way of enriching themselves and is closely tied to the entire sort of like tech bro universe. There was a piece that came out in the Washington Post yesterday or 2 days ago, basically enumerating the billionaires that have donated to political campaigns and political and not just specific individual campaigns, but, you know, outside expenditures, et cetera, to the extent that you can track this stuff. Overwhelmingly, it is tech money, and overwhelmingly, it is going to Republicans. And that is because, and it's shifted over the past like 10 years or so, that is because Republicans pursue largely policies that billionaires like. And there is a big, you know, put this up. There is a big, now, the drop to Democrats and the explosion is obviously like a function of, even though I guess it happens before 2024, a function of like where the tech guys decided their future lies. But this is a problem. This kind of money is a problem. And so there's a lot of people who are talking about getting out in front of it in terms of AI, but also just in terms of getting out in front of these tech behemoths. Here's Graham Plattner answering a question about two tech behemoths, Google and Palantir.
So if I had my way, we would break all these companies up. Palantir wouldn't exist. Google wouldn't exist. This AI bubble that's about to burst. We could have regulated this nonsense in a way that, one, would make sure that we're doing it in a fashion that's going to benefit workers and not just put people out of work.
Hell yeah.
That's currently, I guess. But it's also, but I mean, all of it exists, though, because we live in an information space now where all of your data is not blocked.
And, you know, here's the thing. This is a guy who's taking a very, very direct position on this. We should not, Google should be broken up. Palantir should not exist. And, you know, I've met a couple of people who have become senators, a couple of people who were senators. I've interviewed senators. My guess is Plattner easily goes into, and there's a difference between being a senator and being, an executive. An executive, you need to have a certain skill set. In terms of managing people, in terms of like policies, in terms of organizing this stuff, it's harder to assess whether somebody has those skills. As a senator, all you really need, for the most part, is an understanding of the issues. You could also argue there are some that are more effective lawmakers because they know how to negotiate with people and they develop. But somebody who's coming in with policies that are sort of outliers, that's not what they're going to do in their first term. What they're going to do is they're going to message, and they're going to be in hearings, and they're going to ask questions. They're going to bring things about. And Plattner understands this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his understanding, articulating this stuff in a fairly sophisticated way.
Can you go back to the chart from the Washington Post just to buttress this point? It's right there in the other tab. Here it is. Just because you were saying like how that dip already started happening after 2020, really. And
the midterms.
That's the midterms. That is Lina Khan, too, I would guess. That is Jonathan Cantor. That is the Biden administration enforcing our antitrust laws.
Yep.
And that's not coming back. So do this instead.
And I'll just say the broader, look at the graph. That's the end of democracy you see on that graph there.
That's fascism.
Like,
right?
We look at how little of a spending that the wealthiest had in elections before Citizens United, and we act like we're democracy can't just be saved in a neutral way.
Yes.
You need to affirmatively with action build it.
And when we talk about, like, you know, I was having some debate over the weekend with, like, a friend of mine about, you know, how do you define fascism? What's the definition of fascism in this instance? And it very much is the merging, yes, of course, like, there's the nationalism, there's the militarism of the Trump administration, but the merging of corporate power with the state and then using a marginalized other as the scapegoat to further your interests is very much what we're seeing there in the form of federal election donations, where the power is consolidating on one side. That's the enormity of what we're facing here. And we're talking about tattoos.
I mean, I don't think
I'm sorry.
I don't think that the tattoo thing was like that people were making, you know, something out of nothing. It's a relevant question, but at one point you have to make a decision. You look at the totality of the evidence. Again, this is what I've been saying for weeks. It's not that Pete Hegseth just has a Christian nationalist tattoo. It's that every other thing he's doing is consistent with that. The idea is that the branding actually fits the actions. And so, I don't know. I have not heard as much people complain about that. And I think the campaign itself has, taken the argument to Mainers. And it appears from afar, from the reporting I've read there locally, that he is, you know, when people go to see him, they walk out of there and they believe. So I think this is a good thing. Uday and Kuse Lutnick, I heard Plantin's favorite apple is a Red Delicious, Sam. I don't know if that changes things for you. Not in a million years.
Yeah, did you look through his Reddit post for
first
apples?
First of all, people should understand, Maine has a tremendous amount of heritage apples. And Maine's becoming...
News to me.
People should understand this.
People should understand this. And I would say it's more than likely that we're going to see much of the Northeast apple production move to Maine over the course of the next two decades, I would say, because we're
it's great news.
Yeah. There's no way Red Delicious. I won't believe it. I actually think that Black Oxford that I was talking about the other day, I think that's a Maine apple.
I'm going to leave the show to start an orchard in Maine.
Well,
wear a pot on my head.
Well, it'll be right next door. I'll be right on that shit. What the F does it take? For what it's worth, separately, Ellie Mistal and Keith Olbermann have expressed the unequivocal non-support for Plattner because of the tattoo in the past history. Your thoughts on this, please. I'm not, I disagree with them.
Yeah. Simple.
That's it. I unequivocally
I typically just
disagree.
Do whatever Keith Olbermann says.
Yeah. I unequivocally.
Personally.
No, I respect both of them, and I certainly, we have Ellie as a frequent guest on here, and I respect, his perspective on these things. But at the end of the day, I think it's one piece of evidence that I don't find terribly compelling as to how he's going to be a senator.
Yeah. But all the people, the Plattner Tattlers, report to me. I'll keep a list.
Plattner Tattlers. All right, we still have a lot of stuff to get through, but that will be that will have to happen tomorrow. I'm going to read a couple IMs and then we will
get out of here.
Get out of here. I'm going to read this just because it seems crazy to me. Tony from Maine. I honestly think you all have blinders on when it comes to Plattner. His Nazi tattoo and Reddit comments are just the tip of the iceberg.
Ooh.
Eric Prince, the founder of Blackwater, has been reported on dozens of times for attempting to infiltrate left-wing politics. Graham's stepbrother is an Israeli scholar journalist who is embedded with the IDF.
Stepbrother?
Now, incidentally, I should just tell you, the way that stepbrother works is you don't get to choose who your stepbrother is. Mm-hmm. That's not a choice you make, but I get it. I'm aware of this. His stepbrother is an Israeli scholar journalist who's embedded with the IDF. Graham is extremely pro-military and not in the sense that he humanizes soldiers. I mean in the sense that he literally says he wants to streamline the military and eliminate some of the wasteful spending on bloated military contracts.
Okay.
How can you rally against the oligarchs while not simultaneously calling for an outright end to American imperialism, which would be a salient issue across party lines as most of America doesn't want us policing in the world? So wait a second. Here's the thing that I find sort of like, I mean, aside from the fact that, like, I'm not going to hold it against him that his stepbrother has different politics than he does. Are you making an electoral argument or are you making some type of like moral argument? Because electorally, I need to see evidence that what will make him win, despite the fact that he's seems to be doing quite well right now, is to call for a total end to American imperialism. Now, I think he's said in those Reddit things, and I haven't followed everything he said about American imperialism, but it seems that he's quite jaded towards that.
Yeah.
But for some reason, you haven't read that part of what he has written. But I also would argue that, like, that's not necessarily the sine qua non recipe to win in Maine. But okay, outright end to end to American imperialism. I think Graham should drop out, and the DSA should put up a candidate with better background. It's early enough in the race. We need to questionable.
Are you in DSA?
Jam down our throat. He said, many said, well, listen, yes.
Go to DSA for this.
If
not
you
this
are in the
show.
DSA, then you should push DSA to do it.
DSA main can do this if they
Plattner's
want to.
Plattner's not going to drop out. I'm telling you that right now. He is not going to drop out. That ship has sailed.
And also DSA main isn't going to listen to you. Neither of those things are going to happen. So that's why you're IMing this.
And the other thing that's very frustrating is that Crystal and Ryan and Emily Jashinsky had Plattner on and asked him directly about the Blackwater connection. I will read from Dropsite's summary of his answer. Maine Senate candidate Graham Plattner says his 6 months in Afghanistan in 2018 as a State Department security contractor revealed how America's wars had become, quote, a corporate money grab. He clarified he never worked for Eric Prince's Blackwater, but for a hedge fund-owned successor that inherited its State Department contracts. This is his quote. They use guys like me with these backgrounds to meet the contract requirements so they could pay us bare minimum and walk away with the balance. Now, if you want to make the case that somebody who is now currently critical of U.S. Imperialism and militarism, it's disqualifying for you that they have ever worked for a contractor or have ever been in the military prior to that, good luck making that case throughout the rest of Maine. That is really all I have to say about that, because I find this kind of politics incredibly toxic, whatever's going on here. We have to give people the ability to have an experience with our military and turn around and say that it's wrong. And it's not like, you know, I've seen some people say this is like supporting a former IDF soldier. If the former IDF soldier was coming out and saying, we committed genocide, I've done wrong, I want to change things, I want to make Israel one democratic state from the river to the sea, we would be like, hell yeah, dude.
Avi Shlaim was an IDF soldier.
I mean, it's just like this censoriousness is toxic for the brand right now of the Democratic Party.
But,
the way that
but these people are to the left of the Democratic Party.
Fine, fair enough. But like, whatever it is, I mean, it's also, it's being deployed by Chuck Schumer and the DSCC too. So
it's the horseshoe theory.
It's the horseshoe theory of idiots in Democratic politics.
It's liberal individualism. Like, this is about some kind of displaced morality. Again, like, there is a process to get DSA Maine to do this. They're not doing it because it'd be fucking stupid. It would embarrass them. If DSA is like saying, we condemn Graham Platner and we're going to run our own thing, and then what? They get nothing?
I mean, how many squeaky, clean consultant lawyers are we going to put up who've been living their whole life? Pete Buttigieg, just got to get there, got to go to Harvard, got to be in the military because I want to be set up my whole life for a politician, that don't connect with people on an everyday basis who are great in front of the camera but don't have the connection that Platner does. Like, do we want the party to be more representative of a wider swath of people, or do we want to scold people because their background isn't squeaky clean, even if they've changed? It is just amazing how people are so reflexive in wanting to limit. We're talking about a big tent, Ezra Klein. My God. Like, this is the stuff that actually makes our tent smaller.
I think, look, at the end of the day, my number one agenda is to make Susan Collins not be the senator from Maine. And people would have a much easier argument if the Democratic establishment had put up a candidate who you could actually contrast to Susan Collins. And they didn't. And I think, you know, Democratic primary voters in Maine will make the decision.
Yeah.
And yes. I think the reason why people are asking for Graham Platner to drop out is because they think he's going to win. And the people who think that he's a secret plant, I think, frankly, honestly, I think it's a little bit it's a little bit off. Like, it's just the conspiracy. You can say, I don't like him, and I'm going to vote for Janet Mills because she represents the type of politics I prefer, and she seems like a better person. But good luck with that. I don't think it's going
to
happen.
The thing is, like, I hope to, you know, interview Graham in the future. And on the whole empire question, you know, he talks about stupid wars. I do want to ask him, like, that's short of what Smedley Butler would say, that war is a racket. But I expect to ask that of Graham because Graham is familiar with Smedley Butler.
Like, who is the anti-empire Senate candidate that you're buying?
Mills, yeah.
Like, I mean, like, who, like, where? Wait, never mind just Maine. Like, in what? Like,
he's to the left of Bernie on this. Yes. Let's just be real. What you're basically saying is Bernie Sanders only called it a genocide after what? How long? How long did it take? He's been on hitting the ground running, calling it a genocide. What do you want?
Okay, who's the who's the Negoose? Oh, nice. Hey, MR crew, I've been waiting for a while for you to read this IM name, as I am very proud of it. Oh, well, you should be. I thought that was pretty clever. Can I please get a I think it's good drop for my amazing daughter, Mackenzie, who is turning 4 tomorrow. Love the coverage. Hope you all have a good Thanksgiving.
I don't get who's the Negoose. I get it's about who's the caboose.
But Negoose was just a congressman that we played a clip of the other day. I don't even know much about him.
I think it's good.
There you go. Kowalski from Nebraska. The meatpacking plant closure in Lexington is going to be devastating. Not only will the community of just under 11,000 people lose 3,000 jobs, but the country itself, which has only 25,000 the county itself, which has only 25,000 people, will be losing the largest source of tax revenue. The bleed-on effects of the closure will be catastrophic. That plant at full capacity processed nearly 5,000 head of cattle per day, which means nearly 125 wow. semi-loads of cattle came into that plant, and 100-plus trucks of load processed beef left every day. So we'll see a dramatic impact to the transportation and logistics and mechanic shops in the area. The entire service sector just lost its primary economic pay base. The real estate sector will have no one with capital to invest in new housing stock. How a lot of meatpacking plants in Nebraska work is they're located just off Interstate 80, where most of the population lives, usually within 25 miles. The plants themselves then typically service the counties north and south of Interstate 80 for a couple hundred miles or so. So this plant closure will lead to an increase in transportation costs. These ranchers must now divert to other facilities to the east and west. It's important to remember all of this will have impacts on the county budget, which will then have impacts on the school budget and the county infrastructure budgets. The fault of this plant closure falls squarely on Senators Pete Ricketts and Deb Fisher, who had the power as United States senators to prevent the trade war from causing this. I hope Dan Osborne capitalizes on this. Also on Friday, before the announcement versus today, the Tyson stock price has gone up from 50 to 55. This economic system's a joke. I'm hoping to put out a video about this tomorrow.
Well, Pete Ricketts said, I will do everything I can to support the Nebraskans who are immediately impacted by the decision to close the plant. We must help them stay in our state. And how do we do that with the government? This news is especially heartbreaking around the holidays. I ask Nebraskans to keep the community of Lexington in their prayers. So
that's great from a senator. Mm. Pray for help.
Neil from San Francisco, his sister is in on it, too. I don't know what that's in reference to. Skidmark Twain. I think he's saying he or his kid was an only child for 11 years. I don't know about that. Tire warrant. This thing's that's happening in Lexington is the type of thing that turns promising towns into ghosts within a couple of decades. I think it's going to take a lot less than that.
Yeah.
Taco time for Bonzo. Rest in peace, Jimmy Cliff, reggae singer supreme. Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Narrative sanity. I need Kowalski to run for governor of Nebraska, and Sam CNN needs to put you on a panel with Ken Jennings. You know what? I can't do that show. No, I know who you're talking about. I can't do the late night show. I did it once, and it's like at 9 or 10 at night, and I get home at 11:30, and it's like, unless it's like on a day I have day off the next day, I can't do it. It's just too late for me. I'm too tired. Kyle Leck, the other IMer, might be basing some of those comments on Rebecca Watson's critique of Plattner and for Sam and Emma and others supporting him.
Yeah, I don't know who that is. Not interested.
Human phone book. I think it was Road Rules. Oh, that Sean Duffy. Annual reminder, hashtag not all uncles.
How'd I get that wrong? Wait, he was on Real World too.
All right, three more.
There was crossover.
Vox Populi. Most of the airport incidents in 2021 were likely MAGA nitwits refusing to wear masks during COVID, so it's ludicrous. Fox wants to use that as an example.
Real World. Do you want to guess what city Sean Duffy was from, Real World? I'm going to ask Sam because I know you saw.
Well, I would say San Diego.
No.
Wait, where the Real World was?
So where it was taken. They'll do Real World X City, Real World X.
Oh, Boston.
Yeah.
Did you guess because his name is Sean Duffy and... One in three people in Boston are named Sean and or Duffy.
It's just, I just, like, why would Emma be asking me this?
Damn it, son.
Canuck comrades, me necked, me back, me blank, me crack.
Oh, my God.
I just read them. Ezra Klein's beard. Matt, so check the YouTube chat. This? Lot of tattlers. Does that make me a plant, a Plattner, tattler, ratter?
Sorry, Irish.
Dump Trump.
Me nicked.
Oh boy. Normalize napping on strangers when you fly. And the final I am of the day. Milo, of all the things I have in common with famous people, spending the same amount of my childhood in Iran, like PBD, has to be my least favorite one. On behalf of all the Iranian nation, especially us religious minorities, we disown and denounce this clown.
Somebody needs a roast.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did you put up with a 3-hour roast?
Yeah, I don't think so. Matt, Brian, Emma, great job today, folks. See you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light's shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made. For the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick. Shifted in and out of here.